We continue in our ongoing series of conversations. David Murata is the president of Murata Wealth Management, online at muratonmoney.com, and a longtime contributor to this program. By the way, this is a series that is also available online for your reading. And you can visit us online at shillingshow.com, where David has shared those with us, also online at muratonmoney.com. Looking backward on socialism today, the intolerance of socialism, and it's just fascinating. What hypocrisy behind all of this. David, welcome to The Shilling Show. Thank you for being with us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I can't imagine this series being more important when we decided to sort of embark on this series on socialism. Because there's a rising socialism in the United States, and it has certain characteristics that people who say that they support socialism don't support the characteristics of socialism. That's why I think it's an important debate.
It certainly is. So let's, as we do at the beginning of these conversations, just take a look at this book and where it is we're pulling from, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, today's topic isn't as much from the book, although there's some quotes from the book in there. But the book is called Looking Backwards, and it's the foundation of most of socialism. It was published in 1888 by Edward Bellamy, and it really is responsible for much of the socialist thought in the 1920s and 30s that then brought about most of the socialist thought in America since then. And it really has everything in it that you might imagine about socialism. So it's an interesting place to sort of look at. The intolerance of socialism is an interesting piece because it's been rising more since the turn of the century, since 2000. And it's an odd case because there's often a debate about, you know, which political party is the most intolerant and which is the most oppressed and how does that go back and forth. But no one ever stops to sort of define the terms that they're talking about. And what I found interesting is that if you look at intolerant, intolerant is defined as the unwilling to grant equal freedom of expression or unwilling to grant or share social, political, or professional rights. So it's really a thing about what are you going to allow to even be or to do. Whereas tolerant is a little bit different. There's a space between intolerant and tolerant. Tolerant is defined as without prohibition, hindrance, or contradiction. Well, prohibition and hindrance, really, if you're going to prohibit something or you're not going to, you're going to hinder it coming about, that's intolerant. But this idea of contradiction is really the space between tolerance and intolerance. Mm-hmm. If you just say, I think that's wrong, then you're not tolerant because you're contradicting it, but you're not intolerant because you're not banning it. And so it's this idea of free speech, which is really in the middle. And it makes sense because really in the middle is something you're not trying to describe. It's not tolerant. It's not intolerant. Conservatives would say, you know, tolerance is the sign of a weak mind because you just believe everything that everyone says and you never contradict anything. Mm-hmm. And intolerance is I'm going to ban it. I'm going to make it illegal. So this whole idea of free speech really falls in the middle. I don't agree with you. I'm going to say I don't agree with you, but I'm not going to ban it or make it illegal. And increasingly, with what the new left has done is that they have made this position of being in the middle illegal. So they have said there are some things that you just can't say. You can't say certain things because we're going to define it as hate speech. And Herbert Marcuse is really considered the father of the new left. Mm-hmm. And by new left, I really mean this progressive socialist movement that's been rising in America. And he basically said, and this is a quote from him, tolerance is extended to policies, conditions, and modes of behavior which should not be tolerated because they are impeding, if not destroying, the chances of creating existence without fear and misery. So because these verbal things are making our socialist utopia harder to come about, we should just ban people from being able to say that. And he ends the whole thing by saying liberating tolerance, which is his term for being intolerant, liberating tolerance then would mean intolerance against movements from the right and toleration of movements from the left. So it's this idea that if you have leftist speech, that should be protected. But if you have, I'll call it rightist speech, then that should not be tolerated and should be banned. And you should take actions against it to prohibit it or hinder it.
You know, this is remarkable because it's so thick in hypocrisy. I remember our recently retired delegate Toscano some years ago, upset that the so-called, as he would term them, climate deniers were appearing before the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors and bringing forth things that he and they didn't want to hear. And, you know, we have this documented, but he suggested that they should not be allowed to speak at public meetings. This was going back probably about 10 years. I found that remarkable, and yet nobody picked up on it.
Yeah, they ban certain forms of speech. They have hate speech laws. The Antifa takes violence against people who are simply trying to talk. Conservative speakers are banned from college campuses. It's this idea that there is no protection for the rights of conservatives in terms of their free speech.
You know what's happened, and this is interesting, because the classic liberal, as we would refer to them, was in favor of tolerance in the true meaning, in the broad meaning, and of free speech at colleges and so forth. And yet that person has kind of, I don't know, become extinct. Does that still exist as a class of people?
They're called libertarians now. libertarians are the classic liberals. Mm-hmm. If you want to go do something, fine. We don't think there should be laws against it. We're not going to try to prohibit things. But free speech, that's just a right to libertarians. It shouldn't be done. You know, if you really want to know, you know, sort of what it would be like to live in a country in which, you know, there wasn't free speech, there are a lot of examples of that in the world, and none of them are good. They are all just simply banning things on the basis of speech. But it makes sense from the socialist perspectives. What do you do when it seems that millions of citizens are standing in the way of your socialist paradise? You are intolerant of them. You have to get them out of the way, and you have to shut them up because they're just making it look like people don't want the choices that you're making for them.
And this is where it starts, and this is where it goes. Let's go to the break here. We come back on the other side. The phone lines are open. We're talking about socialism and intolerance, the two going hand in hand, despite the proclamations of tolerance. We come back on the other side. Much, much more of this conversation with David Morata and you. 977-1070 is the phone number. Stay with The Shilling Show. Gotta get out of here, get it all off my mind. And like a memory from your grandpa's attic, a song comes slipping through the radio static, changing my mood. A little George Strait, 19... So I love it when the headlines coincide with what we're talking about. David Morata is with us. We're talking about the intolerance of socialism here on The Shilling Show, 977-1070. This is coming from James O'Keefe, who's done a lot of undercover work and released a lot of stories. Apparently, and this is just breaking now, a Bernie Sanders field organizer was caught saying that Trump supporters need to be placed in gulag reeducation like Stalin used if Bernie wins. If that doesn't put an exclamation point on what we're talking about, nothing does.
You know, that is amazing. There's a section in the book Looking Backwards from Edward Bellamy in which he says basically that all forms of behavior that don't support the socialist utopia in America are now considered mental health. Mm-hmm. He's saying this in 1888. And so they're all dealt as mental health issues, not as political issues, because there's only one political party now in America, and that, you know, they've abolished all mm-hmm. political parties. So mm-hmm. that's what it looks like when you vote socialism in. You can vote socialism in, but you really can't escape it once it's there. And that's a second way that socialism is intolerant. Capitalism tolerates socialism so long as the socialism is a voluntary thing that you join. In fact, mm-hmm. Capitalism has thousands of socialist organizations, neighborhoods, associations, clubs, committees, corporations. Those are all voluntary associations. But socialism does not tolerate capitalism. In fact, socialism's very aim is to eliminate capitalism. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have a quote in my article basically saying, yeah, we're proposing all of this stuff in order to get the conversation started, but our real goal is to simply abolish capitalism, because pooled resources is the way in which we can meet people's needs. Mm-hmm. So that's the whole goal of Democratic socialism is trying to vote in socialism because that will abolish capitalism.
You know, it's frightening because we have a Democrat socialist by name who, there are others probably who are not by name, but one by name who ran openly as a socialist for the Charlottesville City Council. And, you know, he's 26 or 27 years old, and you could just see this lust for power and for redistributing what belongs to other people in the name of whatever he sees as justice. I mean, it's just it's an open desire. And it's very frightening to see people in political office. That's what they want to do. That's a real threat.
Yeah, there's a book out, you know, Why Not Socialism? It's a fairly famous book. Mm-hmm. And in it, they have the example of we're all going on a camping trip together. And so we're going on this camping trip together. And so we have certain rules of, you know, sharing our food and stuff like that. And so that's why this beauty of socialism works. What they don't do is they don't make it involuntary. In other words, mm-hmm. No one's holding a gun to your head and saying you're coming on this camping trip, or no one is trying to guilt trip in passerbys by saying, you know, you need to come and you're immoral if you don't come.
Mm-hmm.
And the point of that is basically that voluntary association in small groups is highly desirable, but involuntary associations, the more intimate it is, the worse it is. If you force someone to have, you know, an intimate relationship with you in which they have to live with you, that's just an evil, awful thing to mm-hmm. want. And it's awful on small groups and it's awful on large groups. So the whole idea of voluntary associations, you know, conservatives and libertarians build some of the most robust communities in churches and communities and corporations and associations and clubs. So it's not that we're antisocial. It's just we are not forced social. We're not for involuntary associations. We're not for making the entire thing required by people. It's this voluntary association that actually makes it beautiful.
I was trying to think of some examples of involuntary association in today's society, and what immediately popped to mind was Obamacare, which is so atrocious in every way that I could possibly think of. Does that fit, and can you think of others?
Yes, it does. And pretty much any time you throw the word for all in front of something, it makes it involuntary. So, you know, imagine, and this is actually Bernie Sanders had a quote in which he was saying, "We don't need so many kinds of deodorant." You know, we're going to have one deodorant for all. But the point of the free market is actually one. There isn't one best deodorant.
Right.
Just like there's not one best mustard or one best mayonnaise
or car.
Right. Exactly. Right. And the delirious happiness of free choice is what makes the whole market work. So anytime you put for all in front of something, you're going to leave behind most, at least a significant portion of the population. Even if you could get something right and it was the best for 80% of the population, the other 20%, something else would have been better. Mm-hmm. And you're going to remove that choice from them and you're going to be intolerant of their wishes and there's going to be no recourse for them to be able to get what they want. So Obamacare was, you know, Obamacare for all. And all the rest of us who didn't want to have Obamacare simply were trampled on, and they were very intolerant of our wishes and mm-hmm. our rights and our preferences. And so we can't have the health insurance we want because it's banned by the market. So there's companies who want to give us that kind of health insurance, and we want that kind of health insurance, and instead we're not allowed to have any of that. And that's very intolerant. It's very pushy, and it's very it's very mean-spirited. And so liberals look at that and say, well, we know best, and we don't want to have all of that free choice. We want to know what's best for you, and we're going to dictate it.
Yeah, so we talk about health insurance. There are others, like the size of the soda you can buy. These are so ridiculous. The light bulbs. Raw milk is one that's been a huge thing, and most recently, vaping now. You know, we don't like these certain flavors because, you know, they're going to be attractive to kids, so we got to ban this, we got to ban that. And I guess the list would go on and on. We talked earlier about dollar stores, but you know it doesn't just end there.
It's true, and this is the difference between the socialism of today and the Democrat Party even of 30 years ago. Mm-hmm. It was really in the mid 1990s with the Contract for America under Newt Gingrich. All of the conservative Democrats were voted out of office. And that was the point at which the Democrat Party really turned toward a much more socialist agenda. The other interesting thing about the turn toward the socialist agenda is it has not been equally a turn toward the socialist agenda. It's largely a rich white turn. It's rich white people in the Democrat Party who have turned toward a socialist agenda. Minorities and poor people in the Democrat Party actually have not gone along with it. They are still much more moderate or conservative in terms of their outlook, which is another sort of weird thing, because this is somehow is being proposed as the best thing for poor people, but poor people don't agree. As the best thing for minorities, but minorities don't agree. It's rich white folks who are pushing this socialist agenda. And I find that kind of astounding. And I think that's one of the reasons why Trump was elected, is because the turn of the Democrat Party in its 2016 platform, which even the New York Times called the most liberal platform that the Democrat Party has ever had, and how it was so much more liberal even than just 4 years prior. That's really turned off a lot of America, and hopefully for good. I would love to see a reform in the Democrat Party and see the Democrat Party taken back by moderates and conservatives in the Democrat Party, simply because there would be a lot less craziness that goes on. But the people who are running today in terms of Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, they are so far left that they should be turning off Democrats. It's not your father or your grandfather or even your older brother's Democrat Party. And it should not automatically continue. Your loyalty to the Democrat Party shouldn't automatically continue simply because they have the same name. They've really changed fundamentally what their values are. And I think it's time for reform, really, in both parties. I'd love to see both parties move more libertarian. I'm a libertarian at heart. And I would love to see them just allow more freedoms and quit taking freedoms away from people.
You know, I think part of the problem, and maybe the vast majority of the problem as we go forward from here, are the government schools, because you know and I know, and as much as we know, there's a lot more that we don't know about the political push in there towards socialist policies. And so these kids are graduating. You're hearing these astounding statements out of people on the topic of climate change, or on the topic of socialism, income redistribution, all of these talking points. It's very disconcerting, because these are tomorrow's voters. And by the way, the Democrats are trying to let people vote at the wizened age of 16.
It's true that we fight a lot of battles over the content in our school systems, and I would also think we ought to be fighting the battles at the efficacy of our school systems. Our school systems are not doing very well. They waste a tremendous amount of time. You told me something at our radio shows off radio a while back that I just recently looked into, and that is, I did not know that there was a Virginia online academy,
right?
And that you could homeschool your kids and go through a free public school education from the privacy of your own home. It's designed for child actors and musicians and military personnel, where they have to move around a lot and you want some continuity. But you actually don't need to know that much to be able to give a great education to your kids. And if you go through a school system without the interruptions of the school system and the time wasting of the school system, my experience has been you get about twice as much learning done as you do otherwise. So I was fascinated by that, the ability to build your own curriculum and have it all there for you in a way that would be at least a much easier to do than when I had homeschooled children.
Indeed, and it's called the Virginia Virtual Academy, and I would encourage parents and grandparents listening right now, as I tell you often, to get your kids the hell out of these government schools. Now, there's an easy way to get started, and it is, although you're paying for it through your taxes, there's no additional charge for it. Virginia Virtual Academy, look it up online. All right, let's go to the break. The final segment ahead with David Morata, Socialism and Intolerance. We'll be right back. All right, the Shilling Show continues. It's a Turbo Tuesday edition of the program. I forgot what day of the week it was. I've been thrown off over these past few weeks. It's a Turbo Tuesday edition of the program. David Morata is here in the house with us. Socialism and Intolerance is the topic. And let's go to the phones here and say hello to our buddy Lawrence. Hello, Lawrence.
Hey, Rob, thanks so much for taking the call, and kudos to your guest there.
Hey, can I say something to you for just a second on a personal note? I was driving last night in Charlottesville, or the night before last, and there was a car right in front of me with a Gone bumper sticker on it. And I attempted to take a picture of it. I couldn't get the camera in focus in time because it was nighttime, but you're still out there.
Oh, thank you. Well, don't you hate that when you can't get your camera? That, you know, like I saw a rainbow the other day, and I was driving down the highway, and it was just the most amazing rainbow, the most definition of color I've ever seen, and I couldn't capture it.
It'll come around. Go ahead, please.
You know me, I've obviously moved as far away from the radical left as you can get and still even consider yourself a Democrat, barely. But I like to, you know, take it to the streets. You were ready to rumble. I'll take a couple of stabs at a couple of alternate points of view here. In 25 years ago, we were number one in education in the world. 10 years ago, we had fallen to number 18. Now, these are by PISA scores, the OECD. You can look that up, PISA, P-I-S-A scores. They're done internationally, 15-year-olds. I won't go into all of that, but the country currently we actually dropped all the way to 35th in the world. We're currently about 30th. We rank in education in the world on three metrics: reading, science, and math. Now the point is the top countries are countries like China and Singapore, communist countries. Now I'm just playing the devil's advocate here. Mm-hmm. And the one other thing I want to point out. Of course, Canada is high up on the PISA scores as well. The other one thing I want to point out, take a devil's advocate position on Obamacare. It was a Republican plan. It came out of the Heritage Foundation. The idea was to get people into pools to buy private insurance, and that came out of Heritage Foundation. Oddly enough, it was passed by only Democrats and is named after a Democrat president, but it was a Republican plan.
Let's get a response from David.
So, Lawrence, a lot of things end up being touted by Democrats and implemented by Democrats as Republican plans. I'd have to take a look at Heritage. The pooling of resources is an option like that. Milton Friedman is often quoted as suggesting negative income. But Milton Friedman suggests negative income by taking away every other form of taxation that's given out to the poor. So his idea is, rather than having all of these other programs, you should have a negative income. Now the socialists are suggesting, well, even he is for this basic income idea, but it's not on top of everything. It's actually a replacement of everything else. It would just be a way that has less interference. I actually don't have a problem with social services that supports basic health care. I actually don't have a problem with that. I know it's not a pure libertarian idea, and so you have to be very, very careful for its implementation. But simply requiring people to have health care insurance would be one way of doing it, but leaving the free market so that you're not mandating all of the different structures. My particular health care insurance has to have pediatric dental. I don't know why it has to have pediatric dental, because that's what they said it had to have. So it's the detail, the devil is in the details of an implementation. Obamacare was a poor idea, and it was badly implemented. So there's kind of multiple things going on there because it took away choice. I think if you go back to the Heritage proposal, you will find it takes away less choice. So it leaves more choice there.
Yes, and I agree. It was an awful plan. It still is a bad plan, but it did come out of Heritage Foundation. It was first implemented by Mitt Romney, so it's really Romney Care. It's such a misnomer.
Sure, but even if you look at Romney Care, it was implemented differently. The Obamacare ended up being very expensive, and it ended up being very restrictive, and it had a whole lobbing of regulations, restrictions, incentives, and laws to force people to do things they didn't want to do. So anytime you have government, you need to ask the question, am I taking away people's choices, or am I giving people more choices? And I would say the latter always works better than the former.
Well, I think that you and I would agree on healthcare. What works in Washington State, for example, is good.
Yeah, even what works in Norway and Sweden is better than what we have.
Yeah. Okay, cool. And how about the education thing, David, real quick? We rank 30th in the world, but China and Singapore and, you know, those countries are at the top.
So I know you've done the OECD rankings, but I've always looked at that in terms of healthcare. When you look at the measurements they have for healthcare, some of the measurements that they have for healthcare have to do with how socialist you are, and that you rank higher if you're socialist on, for example, the World Health Organization. You rank higher if you're socialist than if you're free market. So inherently in some of the rankings is a socialist bias. So I wouldn't be surprised if Singapore or China or places like that that have more socialist legislation in place don't rank higher. Having said that, the United States has a very different educational experience across different areas. I mean, the D.C. schools are terrible. Our schools here are okay. I went to a high school that was in the top 3% of high schools in the country. It was okay. It could have been better. So had I had more choices, my parents would not have had to buy a house in the best school district in the Stanford area in order to put me in the best school systems that I could possibly be in. So that's the inequality in terms of being mandated what public school you go to. I would love to run a public school. In some alternate universe, I'm running a school, but I'm not willing to compete with free. And so you're getting people like me who I think could run a school really well and would love to run a school. You're taking me out of the equation because the only people running schools are government bureaucrats. So that's the problem I have with the school system is it fails the worst. It fails the poorest population, and it doesn't do all that well for the rest of us.
And by the way, if everyone is so convinced there's a school-to-prison pipeline, why wouldn't you be screaming at the top of your lungs for school choice? Lawrence, great to hear from you from across the country. I appreciate your call and your points of view very much. David Murata, we're out of time, but thank you so much for another really engaging program.
Yeah, thank you for a great conversation.
MurataOnMoney.com. We'll be back on the other side. More open phones, 977-1070. You can get in line right now.